Hello, 90s footy fans. Welcome to episode 77 of the 90s Club Footy Podcast. This week, we caught up with former Sydney Swan midfielder, Neil Brunton. Neil, a New South Welshman, began his AFL journey with the Sydney Swans in the 1991 season, making his debut against the Geelong Cats. The midfielder spent five seasons with the club, featuring in 71 games as well as two State of Origin matches for his state. In this episode, Neil talks about his long journey of making the big time. He gives an insight into the Sydney Swans of the early 90s, what his experiences were like playing in a gating role on the competition's best midfielders, the famous pig incident at the SCG, Sydney's coaching issues, and some of his favourite teammates. I hope you enjoy the 77th member of the 90s Club Footy Podcast, Neil Brunton. Neil Brunton, thank you for joining me on the 90s Club Footy Podcast, mate. Really appreciate your time and pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, Trent. Looking forward to the chat. Should be interesting.
Mate, you plied your trade with the Sydney Swans in that early to mid-90s. But before we talk all things footy, which I'm looking forward to, what are you doing with yourself currently and do you have any footy involvement at the moment?
Yeah, look, to be honest, no, not really. I've not since COVID pretty much. So basically, since I finished with the Swans, so I did get into coaching. I went and coached out in southwest Sydney, Campbelltown, and I was a playing coach out there. We played in the ACT-TAFL for a number of years, and then we came back to the Sydney Footy League and played there. So I had a great time out there, great journey. Then, you know, kids come along and put a hold on things. So that sort of had a little intermission between playing and coaching. And then much later, I came back. 2013, I think it was, and had another little dabble at coaching out of Campbelltown with the seniors out there. So it was a good club, good experience. It certainly taught me a lot about myself when you get into the coaching side of things as opposed to playing. But when COVID came along, I basically had a forced break from any sort of coaching, juniors, primary school or junior, my son's junior team. And with that break, you found all this extra time, you forgot what it was like to have spare time, and I kind of haven't really gone back now. Apart from a little dabble, I coach the independent school team because I'm an independent school teacher, and we have a little team that carnival each year, PWSA Carnival it's called, and I coach the team there, and it's always a fun week catching up with colleagues from other regions and having a bit of fun and banter and enjoying coaching the kids.
Now, I'm really interested in your time at the Sydney Swans. You made your debut in 1991, but your affiliation with Sydney had started before that, I reckon in the late 80s. And I guess it was an interesting time how it all eventuated, because I know you had a couple of dabbles early before you actually got your opportunity with the Swans. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. It goes way back. Yeah, you're right. It goes back to the Tommy Hafey era. So the pathway to play an AFL through Sydney system is very different to the way it is now. There weren't any academies or anything. You just had to get invited there was a few development training squads, but they were sort of pretty limited. You'd get the occasional game in an under-19s, like an exhibition type game, not really an exhibition game, but like you'd get the occasion. We didn't have a regular under-19s back then. So you got the occasional game. But my first pre-season was 86-87 with Tommy as coach. That was the most nerve-wracking experience I've ever had in my life. I remember we used to train at the showground next to the SCG. I was there 2 hours early, sitting in the car park, twiddling my thumbs. I didn't want to be late. And I was only a young kid then, so I didn't have a car. I had to catch the train in. I sort of wandered up. We went into the chained rooms, if you can call them that. They were this pokey little room. It was the old first aid room for the Royal Easter Show. There was an old-fashioned gym. Like, you'd get a better gym in someone's garage. It was that primitive, the facilities. I walked down. There was Tommy Hafey pumping iron, sweating up, muscle-bound like nothing else. All these legends, you know, the Greg Williamses, the Jared Healy's, the Warwick Cappers just floating around chatting. I was this tiny little kid just trying to hide in a corner pretty much and just take it all in. So that I did that pre-season. That was more of an experiencing. I didn't get a game that in 87. I didn't get a game in reserves or anything. But I was invited back to the next pre-season, 87, 88. And then I was playing in the reserves all that season. Funny little story there was when I was listed for my first game in the reserves, I actually missed the game. So that's a little known story. How did I miss the game? So basically back then, they'd put the team sheet up in the rooms, and I was being a shy, quiet guy. I'd be in the background, and I kind of had a quick glimpse, and I didn't really see my name anywhere. So I presumed I wasn't playing. I just turned up to the game right on kickoff in the reserves, that is. And then there's all this carrying on going on, where you been, where you been? And I sort of didn't even realise. I said, what? And they said, you're supposed to be playing today. So I was spewing. I thought, oh, man, before I've even had a single game, I've blown it. They're not going to invite me back now. I had to explain. I was thinking what sort of dodgy story could I make up, car crash or something. But in the end, I said, I've just got to tell the truth and own it. I just completely stuffed up. And they were pretty good with me. They sort of, tolerated it anyway. So the club, anyway. So I played all that season in the reserves. And then I did another pre-season, 88, 89. Beginning of 89 was when the pre-season draft kicked in. I still don't quite understand what happened today, but I played the first game in reserves. I played all preseason. I played the first game in reserves up at against the Brisbane Bears. And then during the week after the game, the club got in some sort of strife because I wasn't actually a listed player. And the explanation I got was that they didn't think they had to list me because I was a local Sydney boy and that sort of thing. But I didn't get to play another game that season. I trained all season. I kept on training, which I didn't mind because I was amongst, great players and so on. And I was just happy to be in that environment. But I didn't get another game that season. So I trained the whole season, hoping to get a game, getting told, yeah, we'll get it sorted, get a game, but never happened. And then I didn't get invited back to 1990. So I missed out the 1990 season. And But it was kind of like a blessing, really, because I went back and played with my Parramatta, which is a team in the western suburbs of Sydney. And the coach that year was Ron Thomas. I don't know if you remember Ronnie Thomas, Ronnie Thomas from Richmond Tigers. Anyway, he was assistant coach at Swans as well for a period of time. Bit of a legend in my mind anyway. So he coached us out at Parramatta, and he had a bit of contact with the Swans. He had obviously recently been assistant coach there, and He coached us, and he also played me in defence, which I'd never played before, became a new role for me, a new learning experience. Anyway, we won the premiership year, had a good year, and I think Ronnie must have advocated for me somehow and got me invited back in 91. Did another pre-season 91. This time I was playing in the reserves all season, and then finally got to make my debut. I think it was second last round of game of the season against Geelong at Cadinia. That experience at Geelong was just like a dream come true. It's unbelievable. I don't reckon I breathed for the first 5 minutes. I was just running on air. It's an amazing feeling. You're on such a high, you're nervous as it will get out, but you're just floating across the ground for the first 5 minutes, and then you realise you've got to breathe, and you realise you're stuffed all of a sudden. You go, oh, man, how am I going to get through the rest of this?
And that must have been a proud moment, mate. Through all of you've gone through, all those pre-seasons and obviously the botched paperwork with a couple of years before that, to actually finally playing your first AFL game, gee, that must have been a really proud moment. Do you remember much of the game itself?
Yeah, my sort of memories of it vague, but yeah, I tell you, my claim to fame from that game, I think, was I got a cracking elbow in the back of the head from Gary Ablett Senior. I remember having to step in away to shepherd a team. I can't remember who it was. Seeing this giant legend coming at me, and I just saw this raised elbow, and I thought, oh, I'm going to turn my head here, and I got this whacking great bump in the back of the head, and I thought, oh, I've definitely made it now. So I got to claim the fame. It worked out really well. Look, back then they didn't rotate. I started on the bench, and they didn't rotate the interchange bench much back then. Basically, someone came off because they weren't playing well or they were injured. So it worked out quite unfortunate for Dennis Carroll at the time. He was on Bairstow in the midfield, but he did a hammy. He came off fairly early, and I still wasn't expecting to get called on as quickly as I did, but I got called on, and I went into the first centre bounced as soon as they came on. I was thinking, geez, I didn't expect to be here. And I basically played on Bairstow for the game, which was, you know, another, I couldn't, in a pinch yourself moment, you couldn't believe what you were, you know, getting this opportunity. But I just instinctively thought, I've just run with this guy, and he'll take me to the ball. And as he did, he'd take you to the ball, but it got you into the game. It's kind of really, really helped me. I think I did all right in that game on him. And the other thing, I don't know if it was my imagination or not, but I'm pretty sure at the end of every quarter, like I remember having a glimpse at the crowd. I shouldn't have been. I should have been concentrating on the on the coach at the time. It was Cole Kinnear at the time. But I remember looking at the crowd and seeing it felt like there was a migration of the crowd going to the Gary Ablett end every quarter. So they get like, because obviously, you know, he was, you know, everyone's they're all there to see Gary Ablett Senior. And yeah, I just remember seeing this movement in the crowd. And I'm sure it was to follow him. Yeah. Just at the end that he was kicking goals at.
Yeah. The following year, 1992, Neil, you're a real staple, I guess, of that team, and that sort of followed for the next couple of seasons as well. How much did you learn from the three games that you played in your first year about the requirements of playing AFL footy? Like, obviously, playing reserves, you know, you're playing at a good level, but then stepping up with the big boys, how much did you learn from those three games the previous year, which sort of led you to being a real regular staple in that side following the next couple of years?
Yeah, no, you're right. You just need that first taste of it to sort of experience it. And like everyone probably says, the speed is another level, the skill level, the footy smarts, the players. So, but it kind of what it gives you is a bit of self-belief. And that those games at the end of 91 were really, really important. Think, hang on, it gives you a greater incentive, a greater motivation to just work your backside off and establish yourself as a senior player. In the pre-seasons prior to that, we'd always go to Centennial Park and do pre-season running, like hard pre-season runs. But we'd always start with this about a mile run around the lake. And my first pre-seasons, I just couldn't believe how fast, particularly the midfielders, were able to run this mile. And this is basically a warm-up. And I thought, I can't imagine myself ever being able to run like that. Mm. But it's amazing. With every pre-season and with a bit of self-belief and hard work, all of a sudden I became amongst those elite runners that were running around the mile. And I don't know, you just get a bit stronger. But the main thing is the self-belief. And you just, my attitude was always probably not the smartest attitude when I look at modern way of thinking when it's all about recovering that. But my attitude was no one's going to work harder than me. So I'd always just get there first, get off last, do the extras on the off nights, just be the hardest worker possible. And I thought, well, I'll just give myself every chance that way. So I guess that's probably what it helped me with.
Both played with East Fremantle. This is Harding. Kicks it towards the wing. Brunton's in front. Pitches on its end and goes out of bounds on the full. It'll be taken by Brunton out there. Brunton did a very good job in their first meeting of closing Turley down. So far, Turley hasn't been over-effective. Brunton from the wing.
Whilst you must have loved the opportunity to play AFL football, I think you played 71 games, so obviously you played quite a number of games. Was it hard being on the losing end most weeks? Like, your strike rate probably wasn't high in the teams that you were in. You know, the Swans really battled during that time, didn't they? So what was it like, even though you were playing the game, you know, being on the losing end most of the weeks?
Yeah, that was real hard. You're always looking for little victories along the way when you're going through that experience. And I took it, you know, just you got your personal pride. So I took it as a sense of pride that I always gave myself my best personal performance. And you kind of, I was going through a reasonable run of form then. So you kind of got a bit of recognition for your individual performance, which was nice. And it helped you survive during that time. And the other thing was, I guess it's like all footy clubs, you're playing with mates, you're living your dream. So even though it was tough, and I really felt that, because we always had after-match functions with the supporters those days. Like, you got up really up close and personal with supporters, and you could really see how much it meant to the supporters and how, you know, they were unbelievably resilient and supportive of us as players. And you never felt like you played a bad game when you spoke to them. Maybe when you, when they were out of earshot, they might not have said that. But you always felt like, man, I've got a responsibility here to really, these guys, their whole week, you know, of joy or disappointment can depend on how we play on the weekend. So I really felt that. So that was certainly hard during those times. But the players themselves were great mates. You're having a, you know, you're living your dream playing footy with your mates. And you couldn't, we weren't best on the field, but we were certainly strong off the field. We were united, we were tight.
Yep.
So that certainly helped. Yeah, but it was certainly hard times, definitely.
I look back at your squads though, Neil, like, and, you know, in research of our chat today, you've had some great players. Like, I'm really surprised you guys didn't win more games considering some of the stars you had in your lineup. But in saying that, so I guess the competition was also very strong at that time. Carlton, Essendon, Geelong, West Coast, yeah. Melbourne, they were all very, very good footy sides.
Yeah, you know, I think about that too. And I sort of look at, you know, you'd have to look back at, you know, injuries. And there's all sorts of reasons why teams might not be strong at any one time. But we should have been better than we were, I guess. But, I think back to it. Back living in Sydney, we had basically very limited television coverage of the AFL or VFL / AFL. I can't remember what year it transferred across. But, you know, the only knowledge I got of the opposition was watching what I could. You'd get one match on the weekend to watch. It was very rarely the team you're playing that following week. We would get some scribbled on notes from someone who may have watched the game down in Melbourne of our opposition. So we'd get some scribbled on notes, really, really primitive, basic stuff. Mm. And I'm thinking, yeah, we were televised every single weekend and everyone got to see us on telly. They could study us. They could know us. And I was thinking to myself, geez, we were in a disadvantage. Apart from we didn't have great facilities, you know, as a player, you'd never use that as an excuse because you just think, you know, it shouldn't make any difference. You just give your best performance. But I look back now and I think there's a whole lot of circumstances why we were at a big disadvantage to our opposition. Not certainly the lack of, you know, information about our opposition, I think, was not helpful during that period of time. But anyway, it is what it is.
What do you think was the changing point for the Swans starting to be successful? I know, like, obviously they made the grand final after the year you finished up in 95. What do you think was the catalyst behind getting the Swans being a really competitive unit from that year onwards? Because really, they haven't missed many final series from that time in 1996, have they? Like, they might have missed a few, but not a great deal. They've always been a pretty strong side to play against.
Yeah. Look, I think there was a lot of, well, when I sort of think back to the number of players who were coming through 94, 95, a lot of those young blokes who were coming through, like, I was just trying to, I wrote down a few names. Like, you had, I'm talking about the young guys. There was a lot of guys who became coaches, assistant coaches, who in their post-footy careers. And I think that was the sign when they were really, obviously it came with Ron Barassi and Ron Joseph. I think that's when the AFL really took seriously the survival and success of an interstate team like the Swans. And so with them came a change in club culture, I guess. You know, Ron was a fantastic one for making everyone feel like they were part of the one mission to succeed. And he, you know, he made sure that all the players respected and appreciated and knew all the support crew. There's a time very early on when he lined us all up outside the race, players race, and he invited all the physios, the doctors, everyone associated with the club out. And he was just handpicking players to say, whose name is this? What is this person's job? And it was quite embarrassing because a lot of players, myself included, didn't 100% know. I mean, you get very wrapped up in your own little world and you don't always appreciate the support crew around you. So I think that was part, a small part of it, but an important part, gradually changing the culture, getting the right people in, obviously having, you know, people like Paul Roos and Plugger come in 95, made a huge difference to just, you know, in terms of the young guys feeling like there's a support around them, some experience and some belief in the team, in the squad. And I think with, I mean, we just missed out in the finals in 95. I think we finished 12th, but I think it was, from memory, it was only like a game outside the finals and maybe percentage. So there was a lot of belief with wins and there was a lot of hunger. Once you get a taste of winning, there was a lot of hunger for more and it just sort of just snowballed. But, you know, then post my career, obviously when Eden and, well, particularly when Ruzi took over, the no dickheads policy, I think it goes without saying how important that is in any club for the success of a club. Yeah.
I guess you look in the modern day now, coaching continuity has been really important for the successes of, I guess, you know, Geelong, Richmond, Sydney, Hawthorn. I guess, and I'm talking in the modern day, it was sort of the opposite for the Swans. And you speak about culture before, having four coaches and including Brett Scott, who coached for two games as a, you know, interim coach for the last couple of games of a season, having, you know, so many coaches and I guess in a short amount of time, must've been hard for a really good, strong culture to be created. And, you know, hard to maybe adjust for the playing group to adjust to a new voice regularly.
Yeah, there was a big turnover in coaches. I mean, well, in my career, a short career, but I was there a lot of years. If you count all the pre-seasons, so we, you know, I'm thinking we've got Tommy, Cole Kinnear, Gary Buchanan, Brett Scott for a couple, Ron Barassi. There's five coaches there in a short space of time. Yeah, that's never. Really a great support for any coach. I think any coach needs time to, especially when you got a list, you got to build and you got to create, you got to get people in, you got to manage it. So that I feel sorry for people like, you know, Gary Buchanan, poor old Brett Scott. He was on a hiding to nothing, but he was an interim coach at the time, but wouldn't meet a better bloke, but he didn't really get much of a chance. Cole Kinnear, I guess, had I was only young, so I didn't really know Cole Kinnear that well, but he gave me my first chance. But he probably had a reasonable go at it, but poor old, I feel sorry for Gary Buchanan and Brett. Certainly, Ron was there to keep the interstate footy team concept alive, I think. I think he'd always been a strong advocate of it, and he came up to show the league and everyone that we're the Swans are serious, a very viable, important, viable club. And with Ron Joseph off the field, they were very, very important to the success of the Swans moving forward. And then obviously Rodney Eade had a good deal of success in his first year and onwards and upwards from there.
Well, it's an excellent kick. Just drops a little bit short, however. I thought Mitten Connell could have got there. Allowed it to bounce. He centres it now with a left foot. And a terrific kick by Brutton, who's just got away from Mick McGuan.
Yes, well, Brutton with the tagging job on Mickey McGuan. The role's reversed.
Well, he's been a pretty good player. He got Mick McGuan squelled early in the season. He's doing a pretty good job at the moment. He drives them forward.
Your role within the team was a running role, obviously, with the, you know, the opposition's best players. You know, you spoke about your fitness before, how you really worked hard to make sure you were one of the elite runners and, you know, running alongside the Bairstows and so forth in your first game. Geez, you would have lined up on some absolute stars, mate. I think in the 90s and there were so many great midfielders with good tanks. Who was the hardest ones to play on and why?
Yeah, well, the hardest one that comes to mind is actually Greg Williams. Now, you don't sort of think Greg Williams has got a big tank, but he had a lot of endurance. Like, he was, and obviously a brilliant player, like very hard to stop because his in and under skills and his, you know, could not be knocked off the ball and his ability to read the play. So he was number one by far. Rob Harvey from St Kilda, running machine and a ball magnet. He and Greg Williams by far would be, probably the two hardest I played on. Mick McGuan, and he was a really smart footballer too, hard one to play on, and and just would get in your head a bit. He was very, very good at the chat. So he'd mess with my mind a bit. Yeah. But yeah, certainly Rob Harvey. And wouldn't meet a nicer guy, Rob Harvey. Like I used to sort of consider myself a pretty fair and clean play, even though I was a run with play. I never sort of, you do what you can to get an edge, but you'd never, I don't think I crossed the line. And one day playing with him, it was probably about the third time I'd played on him. He started belting me behind the pack. And I sort of thought, hey, what's going on there? Because Jason Daniels, ex St Kilda, played with us, great bloke.
Yeah.
Went back to St Kilda later on. He often talked to me about halves and say what a good bloke he is. Anyway, I sort of thought, geez, I've really got under his skin. I said, geez, halves, I thought you were better than that. You don't need to belt on me. And anyway, he just had enough of me sort of running in his under his skin too much. And I kind of wore that as a badge of honour a bit.
Yeah.
And I wasn't one to chat back much. So I kind of thought I'll cop as much as I can until I can't cop anymore. Yeah. But he was a good, obviously a brilliant footballer. Yeah. And yeah, you'd lose a lot of sleep before playing guys like those two guys particularly.
Hey, you also got to play State of Origin a couple of times as well. I think you played against Victoria one year and it might have been Queensland the other year. That must have been a great experience.
It was. Yeah, very, very proud. Very proud. You know, like, I mean, I was born in Wyala in South Australia, but I moved to Sydney when I was 10 years old. So I consider myself a Sydney football product anyway. And to come through the Sydney system, a pretty unorthodox way to make it back then. Not many people have done it through the Sydney system. And and then to play at that level was just ridiculous. I couldn't believe it. Especially the MCG against Victoria. I'll be honest, there's a fair bit of imposter syndrome you felt because you're going, I can't believe I'm on the same paddock as these team of legends. And I held my own and I didn't do too badly. And just what an awesome experience that was. What can you say? We didn't win the game, and I don't think State of Origin lasted much long after the Victorian game. That might have been the last one from memory. It sort of was a dying concept, which is a real shame. I love the State of Origin. The whole concept is awesome. And I'd love to see the day when it came back. I don't think it ever will, but I'd love to see the day if it could come back.
Yeah, I would too. I reckon it was great to see the best of the best play with one another and so forth. And they could maybe do a thing where it's not every year, but maybe every 4 years or so forth, and you get the clubs buying into it. I'm not sure how it would work, but it'd be great to see some sort of form of representative footy again, because I know, you know, South Australia, really rich footy state, same with Western Australia. New South Wales, really, I reckon over the last 25 years has grown even more with their footy. So it'd be great to see those states involved with Victoria, obviously, as well.
Yeah. I think if you ask most players, they'd be all for it. But, there's so many different interests there, isn't there, as to stopping it from getting it off the ground. That's the hard part.
Yeah. Hey, you were in that game in 93 when the Pig was at the FCG. Where were you located when it occurred? What were your thoughts when the Pig come onto the ground?
Oh, man. I've constantly get phone calls from, you know, footy flashbacks and people say, oh, I saw you on the telly. I said, yeah, I know, the pig. It's always that game that gets the footy flashback. I was playing the midfield. I was absolutely shattered, exhausted when it came on. So I didn't mind getting the break. But then I was in a situation when the Pig was eyeballing me. It was close enough and I was the nearest player. And I thought, oh, man, don't come to me. I know you're going to make me look like a dill. And I started creeping up to it, trying to sort of round it in, and the crowd were just watching. There was a hush over the crowd because there was a buzz, but you could tell they're just waiting to see how he's going to make a deal of me. Anyway, the bloody Pig gave me a ripping sidestep and zipped past me, and I thought, oh, that'd be right. And the crowd just laughed. A lot of mates have credited me with catching the Pig. Well, I didn't actually catch the Pig. I wish I did. No, it was actually Darren Holmes. He caught the Pig, and he's a country lad, so he had no trouble scrambling, diving at it, picking it up, and shoving it in some poor groundsman's hands, and he didn't know what to do with it. It was a comedy scene anyway. It didn't indeed plug it to us, though. He sort of was a bit upset after that.
Yeah, he was. Famous moment, wasn't it, at the SCG?
Oh, there's a pig on the ground. There is a pig at full forward. You won't catch him. Well, I wonder how far we've got to go back to see when time on was allowed for a pig on the ground. He's just drifting into the right full pocket. Now a dash back towards full forward. That was exciting. But now he's out to half forward.
He's definitely got Dean Anderson's measure.
This is extraordinary.
Enough said.
Oh, fine tackle.
What a magnificent tackle. That's Darren Holmes.
Hey, I'm going to give you a couple of quick handballs, Neil, just to finish off the podcast. Loved having the chat with you. I'm going to give you a couple of teammates' names, and I want you just to share one word to describe, how your relationship or how you saw them as a teammate. So the first one, Paul Kelly.
Oh, courageous. Just there's no other word. Just courageous. I mean, you say one word, that's the word. He just had massive, massive heart. Massive heart.
Yeah. Jamie Lawson.
Hey, well, I'm glad you brought him up. I love Jamie. And, one word is hard to say, talent, but a lost talent, because that tragic leg break that he had, which cost him his career, which is just such a shame, but great bloke, great.
Leon Higgins.
Oh, Leon Higgins, competitor, very, very highly competitive, yeah.
David Strooper.
Oh, geez. That's one. That's a blast from the past. He's a good-looking bloke. That's not one word. I don't know. I can't think of a word to apart. Yeah, just.
Good-looking bloke. I love it. Hey, and the last one, he spent a little bit of time. He obviously played Geelong and the Bulldogs, and he's at the Swans as well. Bernard Toohey.
His nickname was Tough, and it's funny you say him. What in my first ever pre-season under Tommy Hafey, I had an experience with Tough Toohey because we went out onto the ground and they'd recently as they often did aired it and filled it with bloody it stunk to high heaven the ground it must have been chook poo or something. And that, as I said, that was the days when I didn't have a car, so I'd catch a train to training. I'd do training. And then I'd catch a train home. Anyway, and I was also being a shy young bloke. I didn't really tub up and shower afterwards. But anyway, the reason I say that is because Tommy had us wrestling and I was paired up with Tough Toohey. And I was a scrawny little runt. And I was just rubbed in this chook poo like mercilessly by Bernard Toohey. And I would have stunk to high heaven at the end of that training session. And I had to go home on a public train all the way back in the western suburbs of Sydney, and I reckon no one has sat within cooey of me. I would have stunk to high heaven from that. But yeah, tough, very, very tough.
Who was the teammate that you sort of, you sort of thought, oh, geez, I hope I don't get stuck with him on an interstate match? Might have been not the best roommate. Was there one that stood out, or were they pretty good, most of them?
Oh, look, they're all good blokes, but Darren Creswell. Darren Creswell, man, he did everything hard. Like he played hard, he drank hard, everything was hard. And he was a great funny bloke. But if I had a few drinks with him, it was dangerous. It was so dangerous. So yeah, Darren Creswell was the one where you sort of thought, oh, if you want to get any sleep or be able to wake up with any sensibility, then avoid him at night time.
Hey, and mate, the last one, who is the best character you come across? And the one when I speak character, I mean, banter, have a beer with, enjoy their company on the field, but also off the field. Was there one teammate that stood out during your time at the Swans?
Oh, yeah. Well, certainly when he was there, my first couple of years, Barry Mitchell, he's the ultimate team clubman. Some players, you sort of think, he was a brilliant player on the field, Victorian rep and so on. But his value off the field as a club, as the club spirit, club culture, he was brilliant and such a good bloke and made me feel very, very comfortable and welcome around him, especially in my early years. I think he was a massive loss to the Swans when he left. I think just for his value. He would have been a sure thing captain if he had stayed. And brilliant. I just can't speak highly enough. I really rated him.
And, mate, last one, do you keep in touch with any Swans teammates? Do you still go to the footy a little bit to watch the Swans, when you get a chance?
Yeah, look, not as much as I'd like. It's kind of been from Sydney. A lot of players in my era weren't from Sydney, so they left and didn't necessarily stay in Sydney. But we always have a past players function, usually at least one game a year, and I always try and get to those. I wouldn't say I keep in touch with a lot, to be honest, no. But certainly when we do catch up, it's just like old times. It's like you haven't been apart, really.
Neil Brunton, thank you for joining me on the 90s Club Footy Podcast. Really appreciate your time.
Hey, appreciate it, Trent. No worries. Good chatting to you.
Brown, the Strasters, clear for New South Wales. Kick smothered. Chance for the Vicks. Ball's rushed over the boundary line near the behind post. And we'll have a throw-in. Brunton, what a success story for him. Coming from Parramatta, and he tried three times, and the third time he was successful for the Swans, and here he is playing state football.
That's the end of episode number 77. If you've missed any previous episodes, you can catch them all on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music. We're on all the social media platforms, so drop us a line on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter on any particular episode you've enjoyed or a guest you would love to hear. Next week, our guest is former Bombers and Swans big man, Ryan O'Connor.
It's tough, it's rugged, it's good, solid AFL football.